Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how olive oil reduces a major disease. The latest studies, as published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. Something that I believed for a long time, but I was looking for independent confirmation. Well, we now have it based upon a peer-reviewed Cell Systems article that organs age differently. What does that mean and why should we care? Inflammation drives colorectal cancer metastasis. Controlling your blood sugar can also prevent dementia. And in speaking of dementia, chronic disease increases risk of dementia. And some more good news on those omega-3 fatty acids from the Journal of Nutrition. They decrease arterial stiffness and a lot more on health and healing. And if time permits, a little more in-depth on a major factor underlying accelerated aging is the phenomenon known as immune senescence. Stephen Jacobs, Life Extension, did a good piece. I'll share that with you if time permits. Also today, a very important article from Joe Mangano and Dr. Janet Sherman in Counterpunch, The Invisible Epidemic, Radiation and the Rising Rates of Thyroid Cancer. A commentary today from Chris Hedges on Flint's crisis is about more than water from Truthdig. My guest in the second part of our program today is Oa Blushing, and he is going to talk about introducing the scientific research supporting the health benefits of medicinal cannabis oil and how best to use it. And he's a medical journalist. He is the chief editor of CHI Magazine, and he specializes in mind-body medicine and natural evidence-based illness prevention and protocols and the benefits of cannabis and the phytopharmacological properties. So we'll look at that, especially in relationship to cancers and the scientific research behind it. We have a lot to share, as we do each day. If time permits today, I'm also going to take a look at some important discussions, audio clips, and those will include looking at Professor David Suzuki on GMOs. And speaking of GMOs, there's a new research on GMOs, and it's not flattering, and it talks about what's going on with GMOs. And the European Union has now got over 88 specialists saying don't use glyphosate. And so they want to go away from GMOs. Also, we'll look at some other things, including vaccines. I can't get it all in one program. I'll get as much as I can. I'm on the road and doing a lot of important filming. Also, for those of you who listen by the internet, which is probably 99%, and your spare time, most people are Google Analytics show listen at night. And some listen to terrestrial stations, where we've been for a long time. If you ever turn on the dial and you don't hear me, you can always call a number, and you can. So you better write this down. Number 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. So let's begin and take a look at how we can live a longer and healthier life. According to the University of California at San Diego School of Medicine, a very important article published in the Journal of the American Heart Association found that a diet containing unsaturated fats, such as those found in walnuts and olive oil, has similar weight loss effects as a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. Researchers led by Dr. Cheryl Rock of the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine, also showed that a diet containing walnuts, which are primarily comprised of polyunsaturated fats, the really good fats, positively impacts your heart and lowers your cholesterol, quote from the study. One of the surprising findings of this study was that even though walnuts are higher in fat and calories, the walnut-rich diet was associated with the same degree of weight loss as a lower-fat diet. Considering the results of this study as well as previous walnut research on heart health and weight, there's something to be said for eating a handful of walnuts every day. I would agree with that. I think walnuts are one of the finest foods that you can put in your body. Now, mind you, there's several ways of doing it. One is by getting some organic walnuts. If you can't get organic walnuts, you can get regular walnuts and simply put a veggie wash on them and rinse it off, let them dry, and they're good. Even when sprayed, and most of the nut trees are not sprayed, not every food has to be certified organic to be healthy. Avocados are one. Those with a very thick skin, including the nut family. And so whatever sprays go on generally are on the outside. So it's just not everybody can afford organic. So if you can't, there's a list of foods that you don't want if they're not organic because they're heavily sprayed. But there are a lot that are not unhealthy, and yet some are sprayed. Walnuts could be in that family. But also macadamias are very good for you, as are pine nuts, rarely eaten in the United States. Very popular in New Mexico and Arizona because they come from a pine tree. And they're very popular out there, a little tiny white nut. And I think they're best when they are put into a low heat, meaning below 115 degrees, like a food dehydrator. And you just sprinkle some gamoshi on them. That is a toasted sesame seed. They're delicious. Put them in a salad. So have the nuts each day, or you can have a nut butter. That's simply where the walnuts or almonds have simply been pureed and all the nutrition is available. What's nice about the nut butters for people who have digestive problems, it's easier to digest. So that's good. So if you can't eat the regular walnuts, then have the nut butters. And you can always put it in your smoothie as well. We've had a lot of Americans go against all grains in the last 2 years, in part because there have been a couple popular selling books where doctors have gone on to condemn grains. And the trouble is, even if they didn't mean to condemn all grains, you cannot control how a person interprets what they hear. Remember, everyone has to filter everything that they hear through the filtration of a belief system. And so therefore they can distort and frequently do or alter what you said. Now, if you said stay away from refined grains like white rice and processed wheat, understandable. But a lot of people say, well, I heard stay away from grains, you know, that all grains contain gluten. Not true. And it's also not always gluten that is the problem. It's frequently the pesticides sprayed on it. Let me give you one example. I knew I was allergic to dairy. So I stopped using dairy by the age of 18. And immediately puffiness in my face and under my eyes went away. But later I found out that I was allergic to apples and oranges. Now I really enjoyed apples and oranges, but I couldn't have them. And then one weekend, a bunch of us went up to, it was in the fall, and we went up to Goshen and to look at farmland, to see about buying some farmland to start an organic farm up there. And I already had a farm in Stone Ridge. But Stone Ridge means stone. You don't have topsoil. And Goshen is probably the most soil-rich land I know of in all of America. In fact, it's sometimes 30-foot deep topsoil. When you walk on it, you actually feel the ground moving. It's so rich in nutrients. In any case, there was this little orchard up on a hill. I just walked up there. I wanted to see what the guy was doing. And nice fella. And he had this barn, and he's in there making his ciders, and everything just smelled great. I thought, well, what the heck? I said, could I buy some apples from you? He said, oh, go pick yourself some apples. So I thought, okay. So I went up and I was looking around some apples, and I picked an apple. And I thought, well, okay, I'm allergic to it, but what the heck? Worst that's going to happen is might get red cheeks, red earlobes, and a little tickling sensation in the throat. It'll go away in an hour. So I ate the apple. Nothing happened. Great. In fact, I ate two apples. The next day, I'm back in the city, and I stop off at a market. I think, well, I no longer have an allergy to apple. I bought an apple, bit into it. Like in 3 seconds, the symptoms came, and I thought, that's strange. So what happened was I began to test myself, and I found that the same was true of oranges. I wasn't allergic to oranges. I wasn't allergic to apples. I was allergic to the sprays that were put on oranges and apples. And from that moment forward, I began to look very seriously at what goes on to a food rather than the food itself. Now, there's definitely fixed allergies we have to certain foods, but there's also cyclic. And then there is environmental allergies, meaning you're not allergic to wheat per se, but you're allergic to how it was processed, how it was sprayed. I found that out too. I would not eat any wheat products. And then I was in Italy, and I was in the country, and it was just wonderful, just one of the most magical experiences of my life. And we had a bunch of us, and my buddies were Italian, and they spoke Italian. And the hospitality of the Italian people is one of the nicest places in the world. And they invited us to dinner. Well, they had cut the wheat, and then I got to see how they thrashed it, how they ground it. Everything was done as it had been done for a long time. When I asked, they said, because it's the way we've always done it, and it's pure. They were very familiar with the dangers of pesticides. They didn't use any of that. So I had the wheat. Figured the worst could happen is I would get kind of brain fog, go to sleep for an hour. Everybody goes for a nap there anyhow. No big deal. Nothing happened. So, did it again. 2 days later, nothing happened. Once again, it was not the wheat that I was allergic to, or the gluten. Rather, it was organic wheat that was not processed versus the non-organic wheat that is. So I want people to try this if you have some of these allergies. And if your allergies are not life-threatening, meaning if you don't go into an anaphylactic shock or your lungs don't collapse. But if you just have, you know, redness and itchiness, things like that, try two types. Try organic and then try regular and see if you notice a difference. Because I believe a lot of people could be eating a lot more foods if they distinguish that it's the sprays, the other ingredients that are added to or in some way processed that alter it. Now back to the idea of whole grains. There's a good study done in Denmark at Aarhus University. And what they found is this, and I'll quote this, quote, most people are aware that rye bread is healthy, but not many know what makes bread a healthy food. It's not only vitamins and minerals and protein and fiber. Rye bread and other whole grain breads contain a particular group of health-promoting substances. These bioactive compounds go by the name of benzoacyzoidoins, or BX for short. Their presence in the whole grain was discovered by scientists from the university. Now the scientists have dug more deeply to discover that BX factors are very important. And then it goes on to talk about how, quote, certain medicinal plants and green cereals have previously been found to contain BX chemicals. These are the natural phytochemicals. But it was a revelation that they also found in ripened rye and whole grains. Not only that, but they found that it can, and it's also in the final baked bread and other whole grain products. And then it goes on to talk about what it does in your body. Now, that's what I found interesting, is that these whole grains in the body release these phytonutrients, and they have all kinds of wonderful properties. They can do a lot in the body to build up our immune system. In fact, they directly impact with, quote, the BX compounds made certain immune cells react more strongly in some types of bacteria. And then it goes on to talk about how whole grains are important. So once again, we have to be far more discerning than not simply cutting out all grains. Processed grains, yes. Refined grains, non-organic grains, yes. But remember, throughout civilization, whole grains has been the staple of the diet. And we don't want to get into fads and fetishes and say, well, can't have any. Test yourself, because now we know there are things in there that we didn't know before that are good for us. Berberine, B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E. What is it? It's a natural substance. It's a yellow compound found in several different plants, including barberry and golden seal and Oregon grape. And it is a antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, and immune-enhancing plant. And in recent years, much research has been published around the role of protecting against cardiovascular disease and treating diabetes and insulin resistance. Here's how it works. Berberine activates a specific enzyme. This enzyme involves protein, and it, in effect, turns on the metabolic master switch. It plays a very important role in regulating metabolism in the body, which means then that it helps people who have diabetes. And it can help in the treatment of diabetes. In fact, there's an interesting article published in the peer-reviewed journal Metabolism that shows that type 2 diabetes can be impacted with 500 milligrams three times a day of this, the berberine. So, something else to help us. And also, they just come up at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center with nanoparticles, that's tiny, tiny particles, of fish oil, and we're able to kill liver cancer cells. This is directly from the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center. Quote, an experimental nanoparticle therapy that combines low-density lipoproteins and fish oil preferentially kills primary liver cancer cells without harming healthy cells, University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center researchers report. Quote, this approach offers a potentially new and safe way of treating liver cancer and possibly other cancers. And that's according to a Professor Corbin, a professor in the Advanced Imaging Research Center and of Internal Medicine at the university. So, a new technology using, well, fish oil is not new, but the technology of putting it into tiny, tiny micro amounts is. So that's good news. So just remember that. And speaking of another grain that's good for you, from Lund University in Sweden, barley. Barley helps improve blood sugar levels and reduces appetite. And that's a recent study that showed that barley can rapidly improve people's health by reducing blood sugar levels and the risk of diabetes. And here the answer lies in the special mixture of dietary fibers found in barley, which can help reduce people's appetite and reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. Quote, from the study, it is surprising yet promising that choosing the right blend of dietary fibers can, in a short period of time, generate such remarkable health benefits. And that's according to Dr. Ann Nielsen, associate professor in the Food for Health Science Center there. So barley. And barley is, you can use it as a hot cereal in the morning, just like oatmeal. And you can use it in a barley mushroom soup. It's all good. And finally, from our health segment, zinc, that wonderful mineral, can boost your immunity markers. And this is from Tufts University, Boston University, and Harvard Medical School. And they all got together and they did this research, and they found that the older you are, the more important zinc levels are in benefiting you. And this was a 3-month study, 30 milligrams of zinc per day, and it made a substantial improvement in T cells, and that is very important for your immune system. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall. One of the things I tried to show in all the years, the decades that I was head of anti-aging research in medicine at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a research fellow, is that we do not age at the same time. Meaning that your chronological age is not what's important. It's your biological age. So it doesn't matter what you're looking like on the outside, it's how you're looking on the inside. And a lot of people have always assumed that whatever your age is, that's how old you are. Nothing could be further from the truth. So when I'm saying that if you make really good choices, going above and beyond what is expected by society or the medical community, or the dietitians or nutritionists, who are all working within the same playbook model. And if you go to the extreme, and I believe we have to live at the extreme boundary if we're to make beneficial choices in life, in everything. Because otherwise, if you don't live at the extreme, then you're living with what is accepted, and there's so much compromise by what is accepted that we're compromising the truth, integrity, spiritual values all the time. Well, that won't hurt me if I have a pizza. Well, that won't hurt me. It's just an exercise spread. Well, that won't hurt me. It's just a social drink. After all, it's a Super Bowl or it's a birthday party. Who cares? Your organs do care. But unfortunately, they can't be there to show you what happens when you have that glass of alcohol or that milkshake. But when you see the power of inflammation in the body, the last thing you want to do is turn it on. Because once you turn on inflammation, you have no control over what it's going to do. Let me give an example. There's an article published in Gastroenterology that reports the results of research that uncovered an effect for inflammation mediator prostaglandin E2 as a driving force in the metastasis of colon cancer. That means that when you are eating anything that's inflammatory, pizzas, hot dogs, hamburgers, alcohol, coffee, sugar, artificial sweeteners, preservatives, you are creating inflammation. And therefore, you're more likely to have the impact sooner or later. Also, there's a good study that shows that women who consume olives and olive oil reduce breast cancer risk and reduce cardiovascular risk. This is in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine publication. They found a significantly lower risk of invasive breast cancer among women who consumed a Mediterranean diet supplement with extra virgin olive oil in comparison with women assigned to a control diet who were given advice to reduce fat control. This was 4,282 women. It was called the PREDIMED study. And it showed that they had a substantial reduction in breast cancer. Well, what was causing this? Anti-inflammation. Olive oil is anti-inflammatory. That's, and breast cancer is caused by inflammation. Colon cancer, inflammation. Dementia, inflammation. Diabetes, inflammation. In fact, there was a study by the European Association for the Study of Diabetes that showed that if you cannot control your blood sugar, you have a 50% higher risk of dementia. And they looked at 350,000 people with type 2 diabetes, and the group that could not control their blood sugar, higher dementia. Why? Inflammation. A separate study in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society found that chronic disease, no matter what the disease, increase your risk of dementia. So heart disease, dementia, cancer, dementia, diabetes, dementia, fibromyalgia, dementia, arthritis, dementia. Why? They're all pro-inflammatory. Hence, when you can reduce your inflammation, you're reducing the risk of disease. So it's really that simple. It's not complicated. And so therefore, just stay away from anything that prematurely ages you. So then when I was doing this research, I found that when I was feeding the rats in the lab without, they were all in an open environment, no cages, soft music, great food, all organic, fresh juices, nuts, seeds, and they lived long lives. Compared to the ones downstairs where they were doing all this orthodox research for chemotherapy agents, they didn't believe any of this. They thought it was all nonsense. Well, okay. They were wrong. Could they acknowledge they were wrong? Never. And the more educated a person is, the more a true believer they are in what they're doing, the less likely they are to see any other way except what they believe in. So one day at a meeting, I said, I believe, I'd like to put together a hypothesis here, that the body doesn't age at a given rate, that our brain, our heart, our liver, our kidneys, our musculature, our lungs, our pancreas will all age based upon inflammation. And I then put forward my research that shows that the system can only thrive when you feed it and what you feed it in a right way. But if you eat the regular way Americans eat with high processed food, and if animals are fed, dogs, cats, birds, fish, the processed foods, they live a shorter life. And I gave an example of how cats can live to be in their 30s in Italy and dogs in their 20s and still be vitally healthy because they're eating raw food, more live food, and non-processed food, where everything in America is for convenience, processed. And I said, so we're no different. If you look at someone who's 60 and dies, what'd they die from? A heart attack? Well, then their heart was not the same age as the rest of their body. The arteries were not the same age. Your blood has an age, even though it's constantly being replenished. It goes through your body about every 6 minutes. If you have healthy blood, you're going to have healthy cells, healthy elimination. But let's say that you've been drinking when you were younger and you've destroyed a lot of your liver. Now your liver will not be the same age as your kidneys. And hence, you won't be able to filter out all the toxins, conjugate all the toxins and get them out, or metabolize all the nutrients. But no one will notice it originally. It takes time. So now, after all that, and they never accepted that work, by the way. I mean, these guys were real orthodox. And that was all right. You know, my goal was not to get them to believe that healthy choices provided a healthy outcome. They were just too cynical for that, as most scientists are. But now there's an article in the peer-reviewed, highly respected journal called Cell Systems. I'll quote, "Aging may be one thing to your liver and another to your brain, according to research published in Cell Systems. Researchers comparing brain and liver cells of 6-month-old rats to those of 24-month-old animals, they found that aging equally affected immune and stress responses as well as inflammation. However, metabolic processes were mainly impacted in the liver, and aging mainly affected signaling processes in the brain." And, quote, "we found that in the brain, age-related changes were very often have to do with the loss of molecules that help signals to spread among neurons. This could explain why old rats have a reduced ability to form new connections between neurons, as well as other traits observed in the aging brain," end quote. Now, here's the good part. By feeding L-carnosine, glutamine, resveratrol, quercetin, phosphatidylserine, acetyl L-carnitine to aging rats, they suddenly revert back to the same activity they had when they were young. Same for humans. So we have a lot to learn, but we can't learn anything if we're not open to it, which means that at some point we have to purge all of that old information so we're open and viable for what lies ahead. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Any day now, I will hear you say goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then my wild, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day now.
Before we go to our guest, I want to share a short article from Joe Mangano and Dr. Jeanette Sherman. Quote, "Is it possible for an epidemic to be invisible? Since 1991, the annual number of newly documented cases of thyroid cancer in the United States has skyrocketed from 12,400 to 62,450. It's now the seventh most common type of cancer. Relatively little attention is paid to the butterfly-shaped thyroid gland that wraps around my throat. Many don't even know what the gland does. But this small organ and the hormone it produces is crucial to physical and mental development, especially early in life. Cancer of the thyroid also gets little attention, perhaps because it's treatable, with long-term survival rates more than 90%. Still, the obvious question is, what is causing this epidemic, and what can be done to address it? Recently, there has been a debate in medical journals with several authors claiming that the increase in thyroid cancer is the result of doctors doing a better job of detecting the disease in earlier stage. A team of Italian researchers who published a paper last January split the difference, citing increased rates and better diagnosis. But as rates of all stage thyroid cancer are soaring, better detection is probably a small fact. So what are the causes? The Mayo Clinic describes a higher frequency of occurrence of thyroid cancer in women, and not a telling clue unless more is now known about what predisposes women to the condition. It mentions inherited genetic syndromes that increase risk. In the atomic age, radioactive iodine, chiefly iodine-131, has proliferated from atom bomb explosions, now from nuclear power reactors. The thyroid gland requires iodine, a naturally occurring chemical, but it doesn't distinguish between radioactive iodine-131 and naturally occurring iodine. Iodine-131 enters the body via the food we eat, the water we drink, and the air we breathe, damaging and killing cells, a process that can lead to cancer and other diseases. The current debate in medical journals, or lack of one, ignores the obvious. Although the specific process that causes thyroid cancer is not known, many scholarly studies have already linked exposure to radioactive iodine to increased risk. Studies of Japanese survivors of the atomic bombs the United States dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki found the cancer with the greatest increase was thyroid cancer. A U.S. government survey of cancer rates among residents of the Marshall Islands who were exposed to U.S. bomb testing in the 1950s found thyroid cancer outpaced all others. A federal study estimated that exposure to iodine-131 from bomb testing in Nevada caused as many as 210,000 Americans to develop thyroid cancer. A 2009 book on the Chernobyl nuclear power disaster found soaring levels of local thyroid cancer rates after the meltdown, especially among children and workers called liquidators who cleaned up the burning plant. More recently, studies have documented thyroid cancer rates in children near Fukushima, Japan, the site of the 2011 meltdown, to be 50 times more than expected rate. Today, one of the main sources of human exposure to radioactive iodine is nuclear power reactors. not only from accidents like the ones at Chernobyl and Fukushima, but from the routine operation of reactors. To create electricity, these plants use the same process to split uranium atoms that is used in atomic bombs. In that process, waste products, including iodine-131, are produced in large amounts and must be contained to prevent exposure to workers and local residents. Some of this waste inevitably leaks from reactors and finds its way into plants and the bodies of humans and other animals. The highest rates of thyroid cancer in the United States, according to federal statistics, are found in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York, states with the densest concentration of reactors in the nation. In a study conducted by the government, one of the authors found the highest rates of thyroid cancer occurring within 90-mile radius of 16 nuclear power plants. So when they say we don't know why, and continue to diagnose and treat a growing number of Americans suffering from thyroid cancer, it's just not sufficient. Closing down the 99 nuclear reactors currently operating in the United States is the answer. I would agree with that, and I thank them for that. My guest, we're going to go to in a moment, but I'm concerned about water. I've mentioned this many times, that we should all have water as a right. It should not be privatized, and yet it is being privatized, and that's dangerous. We also, for the longest time, we knew that fluoride in water supply was dangerous and did not prevent tooth decay. I started an article on this over 40 years ago. I keep updating the article every 7 months or so, and it is still valid today. The difference is today an awful lot of municipalities are not fluoridating, and a lot of science has shown that it's dangerous, but that's just one. Chlorine in the water is also, even in the shower, the hot shower you take is chlorine gas, and that's a carcinogen unless you filter your water. So imagine then when we have not paid attention to what's in our water, unless there's some overt contamination where a whole city becomes susceptible, like the Giardia lambia or Histolytic artemisia, some other parasite, which has happened. We simply turn on the tap, and as long as it looks clean, we assume it's safe. That is an assumption we should never make. Why? According to Chris Hedges, what is in the mind of someone who knowingly poisons children and impairs their lives? I would ask the same question. Why did the politicians and regulators and bureaucrats who knew the water in Flint, Michigan was toxic, why did they lie about the danger for months? What does it say about a society that is ruled by and refuses to publish the truth and never punishes those who willfully destroy the lives of children? The crisis in Flint is far more ominous than lead contamination of water. It is symptomatic of the collapse of our democracy. How so? Corporate power is not held accountable for its crimes. We all know that. Everything is up for sale, including children. Our regulatory agencies, including the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and Michigan's Department of Environmental Quality, have been defunded, emasculated, and handed over to corporate-friendly stooges. Our corrupt courts are part of a mirage of justice. The role of these government agencies and courts and of the legislatures is to sanction abuse rather than to halt it. The primacy of profit throughout the society takes precedent over life itself, including the life of the most vulnerable. This corporate system of power knows no limits. It has no internal restraints. It will sacrifice all of us, including our children, on the altar of corporate greed. In a functioning judicial system, Governor Richard Snyder and Flint's former emergency manager, Darnell Early, along with all the regulatory officials who lied as the city was being sickened, would be in jail facing trial. There was a famous historian who wrote The Origins of Totalitarianism and also Into the Darkness, that was Geddes Cerny. and Omar Bartov, who wrote Murder in Our Midst, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who wrote The Gulag Archipelago, and Primo Levi in The Drowned and the Saved, and Ella Reiner in Prisoners of Fear, they all did the same thing. They argue that the modern instrument of evil, and you've heard me mention this many times on this radio program, is the technocrat. These are the best and brightest. These are the people that are deferred to because of their pedigree. The man and the woman whose sole concern is technological and financial efficiency, whose primary measurement of success is self-advancement, even if it means piling up corpses or destroying the lives of children. Monsters exist, Levy noted, but they are too few in number to be truly dangerous. More dangerous is the common men. These technocrats have no real ideology other than the ideology that is in vogue. They want to get ahead, to rise in the structures of power. They know how to make the collective or the bureaucracy work on behalf of power. Nothing else is of importance. The new state did not require holy apostles, fanatic, inspired builders, faithful, devout disciplines. No. The new state just required servants, like clerks. We churn out millions of these technocrats or clerks in elite universities and business schools. They are trained to serve the system. They do not question its assumptions and structures any more than Nazi bureaucrats question the assumptions and structures, the final solution. They manage the huge financial houses and the banks like Goldman Sachs. They profit from endless war. They orchestrate the fraud on Wall Street. They destroy the ecosystem on behalf of the fossil fuel industry. They are elected to office. They are empty shells of human beings who, stripped of their power and wealth, are banal and pathetic. Now, they are not sadist. They do not delight in cruelty. They are merely cogs in the machinery of corporate power. These technocrats are numb to the most basic of human emotions and devoid of empathy beyond their own tiny inner circle. Michigan state officials, for example, provided bottled water to their employees in Flint for nearly a year, while poor city residents drank the contaminated water. An authority spent $440,000 to pipe clean water to the local General Motors plant after factory officials complained that the Flint water was corroding their car parts. That mediocre human beings made such systems function is what makes them so damn dangerous. The long refusal to make public the poisoning of the children of Flint, who face the prospect of stunted growth, neurological and speech and hearing impairment, reproductive problems and kidney damage, mirrors the slow-motion poisoning and exploitation of the planet by other corporate technocrats. These are the people that we've entrusted with our future. Theodore Adorno warned in his essay, Education After Auschwitz, that if we did not create an educational system that taught us to think morally and trained us how to make moral choices, another Auschwitz would appear on the horizons. Schools must teach more than vocational skills. They must teach values. They must teach citizens about the societal play of forces that operates beneath the surface of political forms. They must do this without fear of offending any authorities. In conclusion, we live in an age that has eradicated social and cultural consciousness and left us in a rootless, ahistorical, emotionally driven void. Whole populations in our poorest communities are poisoned, or in countries such as Iraq, murdered in mass. But we have no context for measuring human action and human evil. We find our collective identity in the childish nationalist cant and patriotic propaganda that bombards the airways, not in the cold reality of our callousness and ruthlessness. We do not know who we are. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Let's go now to Berkeley, California, and say hello to my guest who is standing by. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thanks, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. I'd given your introduction a little earlier on the program. For people who might have missed it, my guest is a medical journalist and chief editor of CHI Magazine, specializing in mind-body medicine. And he holds degrees in the humanities and psychology and a doctorate in higher education and social change from the Western Institute of Social Research. And his website is cannabishealthindex.com. New York State has finally put into effect the passing of its medical marijuana law last month. Now, although there's a great deal of criticism about how Governor Cuomo had orchestrated the passage of the bill, which was basically handed over the production and sale of medical marijuana to high corporate rollers and funders, nevertheless, New Yorkers finally have access to cannabis. Therefore, I'd like to focus on the medical benefits of cannabis and the science behind why marijuana has been shown to be highly effective in a large variety of chronic health symptoms and diseases. And when I introduce certain foods to listeners and encourage them to consume certain foods for specific health conditions, it is because these foods contain phytochemicals that have been identified and shown to have therapeutic value. For example, we eat tomatoes and red carrots and watermelon for their carotenoid pigment called lycopene, an antioxidant that's been shown to be effective for reducing risk of cardiovascular disease and potentially asthma and prostate cancer. Or I recommend dark berries, frequently because of their polyphenolic phytochemical resveratrol that has been shown in many studies to prevent certain cancers and inflammation, cardiovascular disease, and neurodegenerative diseases. In medical marijuana, there's a class of phytochemicals known as the cannabinoids that are the focus of research for their medical properties. And for a long time, we have known that cannabis will relieve and reduce the adverse side effects of chemotherapy and radiation treatment for cancer. So please tell us what these phytochemicals are known to do and how many studies there are and what they show for all different types of conditions. The forum is yours.
Thank you. That would be a very long answer indeed. Because there are about 5 to 8 studies published every month on the new and latest insights on how the endocannabinoid system and cannabinoids interact within the body, especially dealing with chronic degenerative diseases. But to perhaps give a very brief overview, the human body contains a system called the endocannabinoid system. In other words, it's a system that exists naturally within the human body that functions pretty much like a lock. And the cannabinoid and cannabis is the single plant that contains the most cannabinoids of all plants that are out there, opens these locks in such a way as to realize therapeutic benefits. And to date, we know of 3 different type of cannabinoid, endocannabinoid locks. CB1, cannabinoid receptor sites 1, are primarily cannabinoids that impact the mind and the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system, while cannabinoid receptor 2, or CB2 for short, are primarily activate locks within the immune system. And then there is a third category that's currently considered or called non-CB1, non-CB2, and they're primarily located in the lining of the arteries. And so the latter one, of course, is significant with having to do anything with hypertension and atherosclerosis, for example. And to date, we know of 114 cannabinoids within the plant cannabis, but there are also some other plants that contain cannabinoids that also unlock these therapeutic potentials.
Okay.
And for example, there is a cannabinoid that's called beta-caryophyllene, and it's primarily inside of plants that are exotic spices, you know, like alligator pepper or shanty peppers. And it's a key that unlocks very potent anti-inflammatory properties via CB2 pathways. And as such, can be used to target any inflammatory process.
Let us look at some of the serious conditions that people have. Prostate cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer. Those are four big ones. What research do you have that shows that cannabinoids could help with those conditions? And are you aware of the combination of coconut oil, raw organic coconut oil, and the cannabinoids used together?
Yeah, and in fact, I love coconut cannabis oil combinations. In fact, I'm using it myself, especially on my skin topically, because there's nothing that works better to get rid of molds or mitigate or reverse the process of aging, you know, as for example, with wrinkles. But my book, The Cannabis Health Index, I reviewed 50 studies relevant to 14 different types of cancer, and those that you mentioned are in there. And all of these studies have pretty much shown that cannabinoids are able to produce apoptosis, meaning initiate the suicide of a cancer cell within the human body. And there's a variety of mechanisms that are being examined to exactly highlight the specifics of how that happens. But and those things are, you know, very important to the scientists dealing with that, trying to understand the process of cancer and how to mitigate it. But to the person dealing with cancer, what's perhaps more practical is, well, what can I do to slow it down, to stop it, to reverse it? And the answer is that cannabis is or the cannabinoids that are within cannabis are in part doing just that.
Just briefly, could you summarize for us the function of the natural cannabinoid chemicals that are produced by our brain and what role they play in our overall health? And is there any evidence that certain mind-body techniques or practices can activate our natural cannabinoid compounds in a similar way that our natural opiates or endorphins are activated when we exercise?
Yeah. To date, we have discovered five types of endocannabinoids, cannabinoids that are made by the human body. And the one that's most studied is a cannabinoid called anandamide, which is analogous, which is comparable to the prime cannabinoid that's contained within cannabis, THC. And anandamide affects both the body and the mind in such a way as to unblock and fortify the body's capacity for healing. And it does that by affecting our physiology and our mood in at the same time. And it's not just that that anandamide, for example, is such a potent and relevant player in our well-being and our overall health, but it's also true that there are numerous other neurotransmitters such as epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, cortisol, oxytocin, GABA, or glutamate that are all in part or significantly modulated by the endocannabinoid system and the presence of cannabinoids such as anandamide, for example. And what's interesting that the bridge between the body and the mind is in fact the endocannabinoid system, and it's a two-way bridge, a two-way street. In other words, when you ingest or when you inhale or when you swallow a cannabinoid, it will affect the chemistry of your body in a therapeutic fashion, but it will also affect your mood. And here's the interesting part. Affecting our mood is part of our conscious domain. We can learn how to affect the mood in such a way as to increase a particular chemistry that's relevant to our healing process. Now, you ask about anandamide specifically and how one can enhance, for example, anandamide presence in the human body. And exercise, a runner's high, for example, is known to enhance anandamide in the blood plasma. However, what's also true is meaningful social interaction, social connections, are also known to increase anandamide levels, and those are things that we can all sort of pay attention to and direct and develop, and in that sense realize some serious and significant therapeutic benefits in the chemistry of our body, at the same time enhance our well-being by merely doing that. And it's interesting to note that for example, oxytocin, the molecule that's often called the cuddle molecule, that's responsible and associated with and for generosity, trust, intimacy, sex, sensuality, that any of these words I just used to describe the molecule emotionally, whenever we activate those, whenever we engage in those activities, we enhance our oxytocin, and anandamide and oxytocin release are linked, is what the latest studies have shown. So in other words, there are numerous neurotransmitters that are either stressors or that are neurotransmitters that enhance our health and well-being, that are modulated either in part or significantly through the endocannabinoid system.
That's terrific. Well, I looked at the international literature and I found over 1,000 scientific papers looking at cannabis medical properties, and I found a lot of good studies on how it could be effective in treating ADD, anxiety, and depression and various bipolar conditions, in particular post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a lot of evidence that it can reduce seizures and treat epilepsy, and it's also very good for people who have any form of trauma. And so I just believe that a lot more should be made available to the public, and we should decriminalize all of its use, let everyone out of jail and expunge their record, clean their records, so that no one who's used it, been arrested for it, I don't care if they sold it or used it, they let them start over, because this was a stupid war on drugs. It was vile. It destroyed millions of people's lives. And here is cannabis and the cannabinoids that can make a difference if done correctly and could save a lot of suffering. So thank you for all your good work out there. And again, let me give the information so people can get the information they want. The website is cannabis, C-A-N-N-A-B-I-S, healthindex.com. My guest's book is called Cannabis Health Index, Combining the Science of Medical Marijuana with Mindfulness Techniques to Heal 100 Chronic Symptoms and Diseases. And my guest, who is well-known in the field and probably the leading person out there educating the public, is Owe Blushing, and that's UWEBLESHING. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, Gary, it's my pleasure, and I wholeheartedly agree on the statement that you just made. And to come back straight to there are about 15,000 studies that show up in the National Library of Health by just punching in a keyword called endocannabinoid system or cannabinoid, and that number is increasing on a monthly basis, and the studies that are coming out are just astonishing, and quickly shifting the future of medicine.
Look at it this way: would you have 15,000 studies on the health benefits of cannabinoids? Show me how many health benefits you have for cigarette smoking, alcohol, right, consumption. All right. So if you're not holding critical the use of alcohol and cigarettes, But you put someone in jail for years for using something that has that amount of benefit. There's a whole lot of stupid, and there's no cure for stupid unless we, the public, take back the power from those who are too lacking wisdom to use it properly. Thank you very much.
We're
already aware of who's benefiting from it. The privatization of the entire war on drugs complex, hundreds of thousands of people making a big profit in lots of corporations, as long as they can keep people afraid that somehow someone using marijuana is going to run on the street naked and terrorize their children. What a stupid group of politicians we have. Tonight, 7 o'clock, two-hour special. The first hour is on Hillary Clinton. Information you did not know, you'll hear about. And the second hour, from Britain, some of the people who have been doing outstanding work on natural approaches to AIDS and education. That's on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.